It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We're building the wall anyway. Illegal immigration hurts all Americans, including millions of legal immigrants, by driving down wages, draining public resources, and claiming countless innocent lives. The biggest proponents of open borders are rich liberals and wealthy donors. These are hypocrites who oppose security for you while living their entire lives. I do too, to be honest with you. I'm guilty. I also live behind walls, okay? They live behind walls and gates, and they have guards all over the place. Me too, because I want to be safe, and I want to make America safe, if you don't mind. So security should not belong only to the rich and to the powerful. Safety is the birthright of every American, which is why we must finish the wall.
That was President Trump last night in his rally in El Paso. And as he was speaking, there were banners on the outside, banners inside the room saying, finish the wall. And of course, you know that that's a huge theme. And we're going to talk about that in just a second. Meanwhile, a half a mile away, Beto O'Rourke was leading what he called the March for Truth. And before I play a clip from that, I would be curious to know, were any of you there last night? Any of you listening, did any of you go to the rally last night in El Paso or to Beto O'Rourke's March for Truth? It'd be interesting to hear from you, and I'm going to put you on the air if you went. The phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. We'd love to hear what you saw and what you thought about it. Okay, so Beto O'Rourke leading his March for Truth. I think Trump's rally, I don't know the numbers, but I know there were thousands of people who could not get in. We also know that El Paso County was a place that President Trump did not carry in the 2016 election. In fact, El Paso County, he lost by 43 points, 69% to 26%, which makes it pretty remarkable that there were so many thousands last night there to listen to him speak at the El Paso County Coliseum. Beto O'Rourke, meanwhile, ended up his march at the Chalillo Acosta Sports Center, and this is what his remarks sounded like.
We stand for America, and we stand against walls. We know that there is no bargain in which we can sacrifice some of our humanity to gain a little more security. We know that we deserve and will lose both of them if we do. We stand for the best traditions and values of this country, for our fellow humanity and who we are when we are at our best. And that's El Paso, Texas. I'm glad the country's here to see us.
Yeah, so that was Beto's response. You remember that Beto O'Rourke was the gentleman who challenged Ted Cruz in the Senate race, raised incredible amounts of money for that race, and many are hoping that he'll get into the presidential race. A Fox reporter was there interviewing some in the crowd at Beto's march, and the question was asked by, I don't know how many people, but lots of people there, if they supported making the United States a sanctuary city. And 100% of those that asked said, yes, we think America should be a sanctuary country. I should have said sanctuary country. Sometimes when I'm doing other things, my mind goes into automatic pilot, but not a city, but a country. So you can see the divide. And of course, it's got a nice face put on it, but it's really not in the best interests of this country. Who could think so? What country does not have boundaries, except maybe in the European Union, where that's a whole other story. It's not going well. Shall I just say that? It's not going well. Richard Shelby, the negotiator on the Republican side, in this group of four negotiating this border deal that they needed to make by yesterday in order to not shut the government down. The deadline is February the 15th, but they have to have, by statute, I think the Democrats want 72 hours to read a bill, which makes sense to me. That's a rule they should all observe. So they were supposed to have reached a deal yesterday. They say they've reached one in sort of, in essence, we've reached a deal. Let's listen to the report this morning from Fox.
We don't know what's in it because it's in principle. Now, that suggests the details are not fully clear. And remember, the devil is in the details, right? But one thing is clear, and that is no one wants another government shutdown. So these four top negotiators found some common ground.
We reached an agreement in principle. Between us.
Is that we were able to work together, bipartisan way, come to an agreement, and our staffs are just working out the details.
So here's what's in it as far as we know. $1.375 billion for 55 new miles of border barrier on the Rio Grande Valley. Maybe some semantics at play here because Democrat sources tell Fox News it's not a wall. But the agreement allows the Border Patrol to use any currently deployed design, including steel slats, to build it. Then there's this. Democrats are claiming a 17% decrease in ICE detention beds, reducing the number from 49,000 beds currently down to just over 40,000. There may be some wiggle room, though. We're told DHS funding elsewhere could give them the authority for additional beds in the event of a surge on the border. The big question now is whether President Trump will sign it.
Well, I can tell you that a lot of things have changed, and we'll see what happens. I can't go into the exact deal. I just heard it very quickly.
So we expect maybe some of the details to actually formally start coming out today. Mostly this could take shape Wednesday, but there's a lot of ifs there and a lot of points for contention, guys.
Yes, and I think, of course, the quality of an agreement depends on the people involved. And I have to say, when I saw that cast of characters stand before the cameras this morning and I found out who's behind this negotiation, the four of them, I don't have confidence. Senator Richard Shelby from Alabama is the chairman of the Appropriations Committee in the Senate. My understanding is that he was ordered by Mitch McConnell to make a deal, get a deal, because we wouldn't want a shutdown of the government. That would be worse than a bad border deal. So just make a deal. And I think, actually, I'll just say this. Richard Shelby used to be a really good senator. I remember when he was strong, he would speak out. But over the years, he has just morphed, like have 95% of the others. And I think when the history books are written, you'll find that Richard Shelby, as so many others, came out of the Senate a much richer man than he was when he went in. That's what I think. That's what I suspect. Somehow when they start, you know, finding ways to sort of pad their pockets, and I don't even mean illegally. I just mean by means of their power. But I think some of it is illegal, too. Not saying Shelby, but I'm just saying some are doing some shady deals and they get really wealthy and then they suddenly lose their passion for issues. And that's what I think's happened with Shelby. So when he stands up, I have no confidence in him. And then standing next to him is Patrick Leahy. Worse yet, on the Judiciary Committee, I will never forget sitting in the Judiciary Committee watching those hearings as they grill judicial candidates, and Patrick Leahy is as slimy as they come. Patrick Leahy was known in the 80s as Leaky Leahy because he leaked all of this intelligence information to the public when he was on the church committee. Well, the church committee was a House committee, but during the, actually, I think he was in the House then. Leaky Leahy. So I have no confidence in those people. And let me just say that you just heard the report there that the part of it that we know that's been leaked is that they have managed to get the reduction in retention beds. And the reason ICE is fighting against that is because if they don't have those beds, they have to release all these people out into the public. They can't retain them. And that's the point. That's why the Democrats are pushing to reduce the number of beds. And allegedly what we're hearing is that the Richard Shelby and those negotiators have decided they can reduce the number of beds by 17%. Let me just give you what Mark Meadows has to say about this. This conference agreement is hardly a serious attempt to secure our border to stop the flow of illegal immigration. It kicks the can down the road yet again, failing to address the critical priorities outlined by Border Patrol chiefs. Congress is not doing its job. And then he tweeted earlier a blatant Democrat contradiction. They claim walls won't work and advocate for staffing and technology. Then they push for limiting ICE space, making it harder to detain criminals. They are supporting open borders and disguising it as smart policy. Let's be honest. Time for that. And let me just also say that according to the Washington Times, illegal immigration is on pace for the worst year since the massive wall building spree of 2007. The projection is that rather than in 2007, it was 201,500 people that the Border Patrol nabbed. And now if we keep pace with what we've got, it'll be 733,000. It's up 290% compared to the same point in 2018. We'll put that on our Facebook page. It's illegal immigration on pace for worst year since massive wall building spree in 2007. And there are many other articles that address that this morning that I won't have time to go into. Meanwhile, Gavin Newsom, of course, the governor of California, is pulling the National Guard troops from the U.S.-Mexico border. Another story is that the New Mexico governor, Grisham, is doing the same. And New Mexico is absolutely being invaded. This is what Daniel Horowitz of Conservative Review reports this morning. In response to a letter written by Hidalgo County officials pleading for more resources to deal with the crime, health concerns, and sanitation problems both from the migrants and the cartel criminals, the governor rudely rebuffed the request and accused the local ranchers of being anti-immigrant stooges of President Trump. Now she has announced she is pulling the National Guard troops away from the border. The Guard troops have been there since last April when the president ordered the deployment in concert with the state governors. I'm not going to participate, nor do I think it's appropriate in any shape or fashion to use the National Guard to attempt to militarize the border where we're dealing with asylum seekers who their constitutional rights continue to be breached. The asylum seekers, their constitutional rights are being breached. This is a governor of a state of the United States of America. It's just shocking. That article from Conservative Review, New Mexico Governor Grisham is allowing the invasion of her state. We'll also put that on our Facebook. For those of you who are from New Mexico or know people down there, they would want to know that, I think. So you've got these two governors who are just refusing, and the people of California and the people of New Mexico are just helpless. What are they to do? What are they to do? I mean, it's just an untenable situation. And so we'll see. I mean, we'll be spending a lot more time as this plan, alleged plan, unfolds today. We'll probably talk about it a great deal more tomorrow. Let me just take a moment to say that we are working with India Partners to help these children who have been trafficked out of red light districts in Mumbai, India. And every day we have a goal of having 1,000 days of safe spaces for these little kids. And it costs $7.08 to provide one day of safety. And what does that mean? Well, it means, of course, it's room and board. It's full-time Christian school. Why is that important? Because these kids need hope. They need to know that there is a God who loves and cares for them, that there's a better way of living, that they can be cleansed and they don't have to be subjected or held to the way their life started. Their life could be completely different. They could throw off the old and all things could become new. That's why that's important. Private tutoring, medical attention, counseling, and of course the sharing of the love of Jesus. If you have not made that call yet to pledge your most generous offer, $7.08 is just one day, and you know you can do the multiples there of what you can afford and how many days you can provide. Our phone number is 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or go to AFR.net, AFR.net, and make your most generous pledge. I'm going to take a break, but when we come back, my goodness, I got lots to tell you, but I always do, so don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Percent of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims who lose everything.
It's truly a blessing. I really don't have the words to express.
And yet, they see a glimmer of hope when a volunteer shows up.
Building the home, that's the second reason we're here. The number one reason is to share the gospel and give them hope.
It's everything that's right in America. I mean, it really represents the best that we have to offer.
That's one of the main reasons for doing it, is being able to be the hands and feet of Jesus and coming out and working with so many wonderful volunteers.
I just feel like it's important in this day and age to teach a child how to serve.
Please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved. Submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well.
I love coming in the job room because you can see these pieces of paper, they aren't just a piece of paper.
Right.
It's a family that's hurting, and it's a gospel opportunity.
You know, I just thank God, you know, for this moment. I mean, I'll be back in my home, and I know it's going to be awesome.
Come love others with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Coe, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A shed caught fire in a Fresno, California neighborhood the other day, and firefighters got an unexpected helping hand.
I saw this young firefighter who's about 3 foot tall, dressed in full turnouts with a red plastic helmet, and I didn't recognize this firefighter. I thought he must be a rookie in our department.
That rookie firefighter turned out to be 2-year-old Jackson McNary. His grandmother says Jackson loves firefighters, and when he heard the sirens, he put on his Halloween costume, grabbed a plastic axe, and went outside to help. Battalion Chief Thomas Cope tells television station KFSN they were more than glad to play along.
Most of us are moms and dads, of course, and this tugs at the Nomex heartstrings, so to speak. But it's also an important part of what we do. We're role models for little boys and girls.
I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We are a hot, hot country. Last week, they introduced a massive government takeover that would destroy our incredible economic gains. They introduced the so-called Green New Deal. It sounds like a high school term paper that got a low mark. It would shut down American energy, which I don't think the people in Texas are going to be happy with that. It would shut down a little thing called air travel. How do you take a train to Europe? You know, this crazy senator from Hawaii, they said, do you like it? Yes, I like it very much. Oh, really? How are we getting to Hawaii on a train? She didn't think about that one, but she's thinking about it. She'll figure it out. They want to take away your car, reduce the value of your home, and put millions of Americans out of work. Spend $100 trillion, which, by the way, there's no such thing as $100 trillion. You have to spend $100 trillion. And remember this, no other country except us is going to do it. That's a little problem, too. While the world's real polluters, like China, would get many of our companies and factories, they just move into China, move into other parts of the world. That's the way the system works. Not going to happen, folks. Don't worry. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen. 100 trillion. Let's spend 100 trillion. Let's rip down every building in New York City and rebuild it environmentally slightly better.
Yeah, that was the president last night. It's the San Antonio rally mocking this Green New Deal that was introduced by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which we're going to spend some time talking about a lot, actually, this Friday, because even though she's the one that introduced it, it really is kind of, it is where the left wants to go, and you need to have a really good grip on where that is. Now, the president mocked it last night. He said it sounds like a high school term paper that got a low mark. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted back, "Ah, yes, a man who can't even read briefings written in full sentences is providing literary criticism of a House resolution." So that was her attack back at the president. While she was doing that, she was also tweeting something else. She tweeted last night, "Cocktails for the Revolution recipes." Cocktails for the Revolution recipes. I would tell you what these recipes are, except I don't understand liquor. She was a bartender, and she has this stuff here that I don't really, some of it I know, but I don't. But it's all about the revolution. So you see, what the left wants is revolution, just like they did in the 60s. They couch it about, this is a new way, it's better, it's wonderful. You know, it's a provision for people who don't want to work, money supporting people who are unable or unwilling, it says, to work. That's part of her new Green Deal. And so it's interesting because campus reform went out among kids, students at a university. I think it was University of Miami. And they asked them how they felt about this new Green Deal. And I want you to hear it. Here it is.
I'm Cabot Phillips with Campus Reform. Today we're at the University of Miami talking to students about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. It sounds nice. It's ambitious. But will students support it when they find out what's actually in it? Let's talk to them and find out. The number one trending thing on social media yesterday was her Green New Deal. It's a plan to combat climate change. It was already endorsed by multiple Democrat frontrunners for president in 2020.
Yeah.
Based on what you've heard of the plan, would you say you view it favorably or unfavorably?
I view it favorably. I think that we need to cut our reliance on fossil fuels. It's definitely a great idea.
I like that it's progressive. I like that it is going to push the world forward in the way we need to be.
Anything that would reduce our dependence on fossil fuels is really important.
I definitely support this movement.
Some of the things in the plan I want to get your opinion on. So the plan says within 10 years, we're going to completely outlaw coal, natural gas, and oil. So gasoline, anything like that in 10 years.
I don't agree with that. To be honest with you, I think we need those things to live.
But I do not think it is feasible in 10 years. I don't think that that would be something that would be able to be done in such a short amount of time.
If you're unwilling to work, we will still supply help for your salary and help for a living wage.
No, absolutely not.
If you're not willing to contribute to society, then I don't think that the people who are contributing should pay for you.
Everyone needs to contribute. That's the only way society works.
I don't know about that one. I think that if you're unwilling, that I don't know if you should receive money for that.
Who's going to pay for all of it? Who's going to offset the trillions of dollar cost that it would be?
Right. I don't know. Okay. Nobody knows. Okay. Like, it's kind of like, who's really going to pay?
Based on what you've heard from these, does it change your perception of the plan at all?
Yeah. A lot.
Sometimes you need to take extreme measures to save the environment, but I don't think that is like, I think it's a bit too extreme.
Well, that's encouraging, don't you think? I mean, those kids, if you hear the full thing, we edited it a bit, is actually encouraging because it's initially, of course, they're going along for the ride. They hear about it. It's Ocasio-Cortez and it's hip and it's cool. It must be great. And yes, I'm all in favor of it, but you mean no airplanes? You mean no car, no gasoline for my car. You know what I mean? No. And so, and actually they, you know, the light bulb went on. It was pretty amazing. And it was 100% at least of what they put in the video. And they usually put, you know, they don't, as far as I can tell, Campus Reform really wants you to know what kids are thinking. So I think that's exactly what they did and what they said. Ironically, you know, after the government shutdown and after all the things that have happened, the media coverage, I just had a report, which I don't have time to get into you with, but it's the late night shows. there was a sort of a survey done of them by Newsbusters, and of 33, now these are the entertainment shows, not the news shows. They slam President Trump. They call him a terrorist. They call him a racist. They say he's holding America hostage. It's just on and on and on, this analysis of these late night supposedly funny shows. And so you see, it hasn't changed. And in spite of that, Rasmussen did a poll a few days after the State of the Union address and found that out of likely voters in the United States, President Trump has a 52% approval rating. I mean, that's really stunning. It really is. That's stunning. I think I don't see a comparison here between where President Obama was and the other presidents, but I don't think they were that high. I don't. This is interesting. It's a significant upswing since the government shutdown, where he reached a low of 43%. Ask what Monday's, I'm reading this from the Daily Mail, ask what Monday's numbers mean, a senior Democratic House aide confided on background, I don't know yet if it's horrible, but it sure isn't good. So they're upset because the president has high approval ratings. Of course, he's encouraged, and he talked about it last night at the rally. All that to say that when it comes to the border, when it comes to a government shutdown, honestly, the president, President Trump, still is in the driver's seat. And I'm just praying that he will stay bold and strong on not just on a wall, but on all the other things that would make our border secure, whether it's the ability to detain people, not to have to release them into the country, these ridiculous policies that are causing criminals to just get through all the restraints and all the crime that's taken place this last several years because our borders have been invaded. It's just, it's horrible. It really is horrible. And so I'm hoping the president will look at that poll and reach down deep and stand strong. Now, I'm not sure what that's going to mean about a government shutdown. Who cares? You know, if Mitch McConnell had, you know, I'm not sure how, I can't think of a nice word. Let's just say the guts to stand behind the president and the will, by the way, and actually help him with the shutdown, help him use it as a tool to make the American people understand the crisis at the border. Public opinion would be higher than 52% on this. I think it probably is already, honestly. And if Kevin McCarthy, who is weak, would do the same thing in the House and use this as an opportunity to make the case and hammer it, we could get strong border security, but you see who's leading us. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. So that leads me to another discussion here. Now, I don't feel hopeless about this, even though I might sound that way. I think when we get to the point where it's just hopeless and we can't do anything further in terms of our humanity, then I'll tell you that. You know, I'll tell you that. But as long as we have the ability to fight and make a difference, I'm not quitting, and I'm hoping you won't either. So, which brings me to the Attorney General nomination. William Barr made it through the Senate Judiciary Committee last week. Now it's going to go to the Senate floor. There will be a vote pretty soon. In the Senate Judiciary Committee, the vote was 12 to 10. Every Democrat voted against William Barr. William Barr was confirmed by the Senate unanimously three times during the Reagan-Bush eras. And the last of those times, when he was nominated to be Attorney General under George W. Bush, the Judiciary Committee approved him by unanimous vote, and the full Senate confirmed him by voice vote. So you can see that this is becoming partisan. But here's the thing that, of course, I've said to you, and I will say again, I don't feel good about William Barr. I'm very concerned. In fact, I'd say I'm more than concerned. I'm opposed to his nomination. I just am. I'm just telling you, as a private citizen, I don't... the way he praised Robert Mueller in the hearing, the fact that Robert Mueller attended two of his daughter's weddings, he kept calling Robert Mueller Bob. No, Bob wouldn't do that. No, Bob wouldn't conduct a witch hunt. Bob wouldn't do that. That's basically what he said over and over again. That was enough to just say to me, why do we want another friend of Bob Mueller's to be serving at the highest office? Why would we do this? Okay, so on the heels of that, Matt Whitaker is filling in for Jeff Sessions after he was asked to step aside by President Bush. So Matt Whitaker was called in front of the House Judiciary Committee just last week, and I actually wanted to play this for you. You've probably heard some of these, but if you haven't, you just have to. So indulge me, because I'm going to play this. I think it happened last Friday. So the acting attorney general agreed to appear. He didn't want to, because all they want to do, of course, you'll see this, they want to grill him about, they think he doesn't support the Mueller investigation. What that matters, I don't know, because probably Matt Whitaker will only be in office a few days more. But they insisted. So Gerald Nadler, who's the chairman, it was a Friday hearing, kept asking him over and over again about Robert Mueller's special counsel investigation into Russian collusion. And it was just on and on, the same questions over and over again. So I wanted you to hear the exchange. Here's Gerald Nadler and Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker.
Now, in your capacity as Acting Attorney General, have you ever been asked to approve any request or action to be taken by the special counsel?
Mr. Chairman, I see that your 5 minutes is up, and so I'm here voluntarily. We have agreed to 5 minute rounds, and
the committee.
I think that's a fine place to end the 5 minute rule.
The committee will end. We'll come to order. I will point out that we didn't enforce the 5 minute rule on Acting Attorney General Whitaker. We will.
I understand, Mr. Chairman. I was just saying that might be a good breaking point at that point for you.
No. The Attorney General was in the middle of saying something. Answer the question, please.
Yeah, so the reason for that outburst was because Nadler just kept asking him and asking him and asking, and he went over time. So Whitaker said, I see your 5 minutes is up. And Whitaker was there voluntarily. And, you know, usually they just harass people to death, but Matt was not about to let that happen. So Sheila Jackson Lee had an exchange with him. If we have the time here, I think we just about do. Let's listen to this. Clip 11.
The short time that I have, I want to make sure that your questions are answered in a yes or no matter. This is the first oversight hearing we have had in the Justice Department in almost 15 months. You did not have a confirmation hearing, and you have not yet appeared for an oversight hearing. Yes or no? Yes or no?
Congresswoman, I am the acting
yes
attorney.
Yes or no? Have you appeared before an oversight hearing in the Congress?
Congresswoman, I have not.
It has been 10 years.
Witness will answer the question as asked, please.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if the department of inquiry feels that a yes or no is appropriate, he'll answer in a yes or no. If he does not feel it's appropriate, he should be able to answer in the appropriate, as many Democrat administration officials have done before this committee before. That is unreal.
The member has only 5 minutes, and if she,
if we've just discovered that she wants a yes or no answer,
she's entitled to it. I will not allow the witness to stall and waste members' time.
Witness Where were you when Ms. Question. Lynch and Mr. Holder
Chairman,
were here?
Witness will answer
Mr.
the question.
Mr. Chairman, may I have my time restored? I think it was at four minutes.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Again, Mr. Attorney General, the question is, did you have a confirmation hearing, and has it been more than 10 years since you testified before Congress?
Congresswoman,
can the clock be restored?
It was.
I'm sorry, what was your... I don't know if your time's been restored or not.
Mr. Attorney General, we're not joking here, and your humor is not acceptable. Now, you are here because we have a constitutional duty to ask questions, and the Congress has the right to establish government rules. The rules are that you are here. So I need to ask the question, and I need to have my time restored so that you can behave appropriately. I will behave appropriately as a member of the Judiciary Committee. I'm asked a question. Did you have a confirmation hearing, and have you not yet appeared for an oversight hearing?
Congresswoman, I am an acting attorney general. I have been appointed according to the Vacancies Reform Act, and I have never appeared in front of Congress for any hearing, even when I was United States attorney.
I'm asked for a yes or no answer. Is that... and so you've never appeared. Let me quickly ask a question.
All right, so that's the way it went. So, of course, they were very hostile, and he responded by sort of mocking them in return. And, you know, my opinion about this, for what it's worth, is I wish William Barr, the Democrats, could tank his nomination, and Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker could stay in place, because he's got the grit to actually do that job the right way. That's my opinion. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Can a woman forget her nursing child, that she should have no compassion on the son of her womb? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Louisiana passed a law in 2014 that required doctors who perform baby murder procedures to have admitting privileges to a nearby hospital. That law, which is viewed as a baby murder restriction, was set to go into effect but has been held up in court. Chief Justice John Roberts joined the regressive bloc of justices on the Supreme Court in a 5-4 ruling to prevent the law from taking effect prior to it being reviewed on the merits. A full review of the law will likely occur during the Supreme Court's October 2019 term.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Dr. Travis, a professor at Blue Mountain College, was a man that was full of life.
Bert Harper of Exploring the Word.
He loved the Word of God, and it came across in the classroom. Dr. Travis put in my heart a desire to know God through His Word. And that's what we're trying to do on Exploring the Word, not just to know the Bible, but to know the God of the Bible.
Weekday afternoons at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Alabama would not allow an imam, a Muslim clergyman, to be in the room with a Muslim criminal when he was executed for raping and murdering a 15-year-old girl. It wasn't a matter of religious liberty. It's Alabama policy not to allow anyone to be present for an execution who is not an employee of the prison. A Christian chaplain was available to provide counsel and prayer for the condemned man. But despite all the bleating you hear, there was no constitutional violation. The First Amendment, according to Associate Justice Joseph Story, was written to protect the free exercise of the Christian faith only and to prohibit the establishment of an official national church. All other regulation of religion was left entirely to the states. What this means is that Alabama doesn't have to permit Muslim imams to attend executions if it doesn't want to.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Congressional negotiators have reached an agreement that would allow the construction of just 55 additional miles of barriers along the southern border. That's a small fraction of what President Trump has been seeking and, more to the point, what the nation requires. After all, we face not only caravans bringing thousands of individuals seeking taxpayer-subsidized asylum in the United States, many of whom come bearing contagious diseases. That's a serious public health as well as public safety problem. Even worse is the death and destruction delivered to 70,000 Americans annually by drug cartels. They should be considered and treated as terrorists, and effective barriers placed wherever needed to keep out both such enemies and what amount to their lethal chemical weapons. President Trump is under tremendous pressure to take this so-called deal. America needs him once again to just say no. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Whether it's Bob Mueller, whether it's Rod Rosenstein,
but the president has called him conflicted. The president's called him conflicted, and you oversee the investigation. Do you believe that Mr. Mueller's conflicted?
Congressman, as acting attorney general, I have followed regular order at the Department of Justice, and I have expected that the lawyers and the support staff and agents that work for me follow regular order, and as I sit here today, I don't have any reason to believe that.
You believe he's honest, you don't believe he's conflicted. Can you say right now, Mr. President, Bob Mueller is honest and not conflicted?
Congressman, I'm not a puppet to repeat what you're saying.
Are you able to say it, or do you not believe it?
I have answered your question as to what I believe about the special counsel. I stand by my prior statement.
Can you say it to the president, though?
Congressman, I am not here to be a puppet to repeat terms and words that you say that I should say.
Can you say that to the president?
Regular order.
Mr. Chair, he hasn't answered that question.
Sorry?
He has not answered the question. If he would say that Mr. Mueller is honest,
the time of the gentleman has expired, the witness may answer the question.
I don't have anything further to add. I think I've answered the congressman's question.
That's a question for observers.
I just wanted you to hear that. That was Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker being grilled by Eric Swalwell, the congressman. Will you repeat this? You know, this has worked for them. In the past, they've bullied witnesses in amazing ways. And I just found it refreshing that Matt Whitaker says, I'm not a puppet. I've answered your question. I'm not a puppet that I would repeat your words. Good for him. And I wish, honestly, the nation would be better off if Matt Whitaker would stay in place. I believe that. So just wanted you to hear that last clip. That was the hearing last Friday. India Partners is our partner for this last 2 weeks. We partner with them every year, but for the last 2 weeks, we've been telling you about their great work in India, in Mumbai, which is to get kids who have been trafficked and sold into sex slavery out of the red light districts of Mumbai, India. And so it's that they provide, they take them out, they provide shelter for them, which can you imagine? I can barely imagine, except that I have for a short time worked in an orphanage. I was a house parent many years ago, and kids who have no parents and have no place to go and look to strangers really to provide for them. It's pretty stunning because most of us grew up in families and we can't imagine it. But they take these kids and take them to safe places where they can be cleaned up. They can get medical care. They can be fed. And then they can be taught just basic information and knowledge about history and English and all of that. And then also that they can hear about the love of Jesus, the new life in Christ, the possibility of, you know, that your beginning doesn't have to be your ending, that there is a potential, always a promise, no matter what your personal story, that God can forgive and cleanse and give you a new start, a new heart. And so that's what these kids are told, and it only costs $7.08 a day. That's just pretty breathtaking, isn't it? But that's India. That's the good and bad of India. So if you would like to help with this project for India Partners and help these kids, you can do that by calling 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396 or AFR. Go to AFR.net if you'd rather do it online. It's just $50 to provide 1 week of safety. $100 will provide 2 weeks. And so you can do the math and you can see what that is. So I hope that you will, if you haven't made that phone call, it's 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396. You know, one thing that makes me really, truly sad is that probably this is true of all of you. We have had some great presidents. We really have. We've sometimes forget that because we've elected presidents this last, I think since Bill Clinton, that are not necessarily, how can I say this? We thought they were men of character. Let me put it that way. We thought all the men we elected, I think, prior to Bill Clinton were men of character. With Bill Clinton, we knew better. I remember covering that race closely, and it was a very great disappointment to me that people didn't care about his moral behavior, and also that his resume was thin. And we started electing presidents, even maybe you could argue Jimmy Carter too, whose resumes were not thick and full, and they were not the incredible person, statesman, that others had been in the past. And so we have two that are my favorites. And every year at this time, we used to make a big deal about this. When I was growing up, we drew their silhouettes. We learned about their stories. We read in our history books, and now they hardly have a place in American history. And so I just want to take a moment to say something. First of all, today would have been Abraham Lincoln's birthday. Many of you know about him because you've been to the Lincoln Memorial. If you haven't, the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. is breathtaking. It is breathtaking. And every night, we go there so often, especially when the weather's permits it, where you would go up on the steps, which are so high, and they go up to that huge statue of him. But the most incredible thing, the statue itself is just awe-inspiring. But the most awe-inspiring thing is that you look to the right as you walk up the stairs, and it's, I believe, the second inaugural address, where he pours out his heart so eloquently about God and how both sides in the Confederacy, this is still the wars going on, prayed to, no, the war wasn't going on. The war had just ended during the second inauguration. He only lived a few more weeks, but he said both sides prayed to God fervently. But it was hard to understand, these are my words, hard to understand how people couldn't understand that if you enslaved men, that God would not honor your prayers. And it is just a passionate treatise about the sovereignty of God, the humility that we need before him, his existence. Abraham Lincoln was such a simple man, and yet he was a great man. And as he was in office, we started to realize, as you read his writings, how truly great he was. He suffered a lot. He suffered so much. He lost two sons who he loved very much, went into deep mourning, and his wife was arguably a little bit off balance, maybe even crazy. We don't exactly know what the diagnosis was, but she had a spending problem. She was emotional, irrational, and so he had the triple, as far as I know, I'm sure there were more things, personal burden of losing two sons and having a wife who was very, very difficult, who he loved dearly. And then, of course, bearing the burden of the Civil War, bearing that burden till his just grown, you could see it in his face. Having some time spent in the war, I think the war, I can't remember which war it was, 1812, I'm not sure. What was some war, Indian Wars, I guess, is what he was involved in. He'd had some military experience, but he certainly was not a general with military training, and he ended up having to take over for a time the execution of the North's battle against the South because his generals just repeatedly disappointed him. The story about Abraham Lincoln is one of the most fascinating. He was a man of deep sorrow. You can hear that in his story, but also incredible humor, incredible humor. One of my favorites is, of course, I'm from Illinois, and that was his home state eventually. He grew up in Kentucky. By the way, his parents' home in Kentucky is worth the trip. If you ever, it doesn't get all the accolades Springfield does, but if you ever go there, it's a wonderful place, and you find out that his parents were strong believers. I didn't know that. You wouldn't know it any other way. Abraham Lincoln was not initially. He was more of a skeptic. He believed in the Bible. He read it because that's how he learned to read. But he didn't really understand who God was in a personal way through his son Jesus until after the death of his second son in the White House. It's just quite a story. But so when he was leaving Springfield, and you know he was like 6'4", and his wife was Mary Todd was 5 foot nothing. I don't know, little. And he said he was standing on the back of one of the trains because he used to do that. They would give rallies, you know, on the back of the train. And he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, here you see the long and short of the presidency." So he would say things like that all the time. He was just hilarious. So if you don't know much about him, if your kids don't know, could I encourage you to look for some of the older bios on him, not the new ones, because I don't trust them. Revisionist history, you know. Because there's plenty written about him that you can rely on, closer to his life and written by people who actually knew him. And then, of course, there's George Washington, whose birthday comes up on February the 18th. Also one of my favorite presidents, and maybe less known about him than Abraham Lincoln. Did you know that George Washington was the chaplain to his own troops during the Revolution? Did you know that he used to write books of prayer, copious books of prayer? Did you know that he met for prayer every Sunday night and a Bible study with, I think it was the Secretary of State, whose name escapes me in this moment? This was George Washington. He talks about God. He always talks about, he calls him Providence, which was customary for the day. Remember, he goes back a lot further than Abraham Lincoln even. And so the language is slightly different, but Providence is how he refers to God. George Washington was a man of incredible character. In fact, I remember reading that King George, I believe it was either, I mean, I think it was one of the British generals, after the war remarked, or maybe during the war, remarked about General Washington that his character, George Washington's character, was one of the wonders of the world. Now, that was his enemy who said that about him. That was George Washington. And by the way, the news that's kind of the thing that you'll hear reported today, probably, because it's the only thing you're going to hear about how George Washington, who he was, unfortunately, and same thing, please read about him and make sure your kids know. You'll be thrilled by what you read. You will. You'll just be thrilled. George Washington, one of a letter that he wrote to Richard Peters, who was the Speaker of the Pennsylvania House, it was signed on September 7th of 1788, and it praises God for the ratification of the United States Constitution. So the letter came, I'm reading this from Fox now. The letter came at a time when the Constitution was under attack. Some states wanted to hold a second convention that may have undermined the Constitution. And this is what Washington says to Richard Peters. It would seem from the public gazettes that the minority in your state are preparing for another attack of the now adopted government. How formidable it may be, I know not. But that Providence, which has hitherto smiled on the honest endeavors of the well-meaning part of the people of this country, will not, I trust, withdraw its support from them at this crisis. He's talking about God. And so, you know, there's a famous story of George Washington going off into the forest. I don't know which battle, but he prayed. And they said that the story goes that he prayed, George Washington liked to pray aloud. And so he was in the forest by himself on his knees praying out loud when a Tory happened to be walking by. And the Tory later remarked to someone else, "We're going to lose this war." And the person said, "Why?" He said, "I just heard General Washington praying." That's one of the many stories you can find about George Washington that I just love, and I think you'll want to look for that. Okay, so I want to end on a not such a good note. I have a couple of other pieces of news I wanted to tell you about. Maxine Waters, of course, is the head of the House Financial Services Committee. She was speaking at a Martin Luther King rally, and she is, of course, threatening. She says to President Trump, "We're going to get your tax returns. We're going to find out." And, of course, she has the power to do that. And then another story appeared in Fox News yesterday. This is interesting to me. On Monday, the 37-year-old named Joseph Alcoff, who has now been accused of being a leader of Antifa, has a court date in connection with charges he's facing in Philadelphia that included aggravated assault and ethnic intimidation for allegedly being part of an Antifa mob in November that attacked two Marines, Alejandro Godinez and Luis Torres, both Hispanic. Alcoff and two others charged in the attack have pleaded not guilty. But here's the kicker. Democratic officials, of course, are distancing themselves from Joseph Alcoff. But now we know that he was well connected with Democratic leaders, including Maxine Waters. Several congressional Democrats in February 28, 2018 issued press releases with his quote, Alcoff's quote, backing their bill on regulating payday lenders. We find out that he was the manager for Americans for Financial Reform, which is participated in congressional Democratic press conferences. He was pictured with Maxine Waters, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Richard Cordray, who was the CFPB director, and he reportedly was an Antifa leader in Washington. He was the organizer of the Smash Racism DC, the group responsible for gathering and shouting threats outside of the home of Tucker Carlson and heckling Ted Cruz and his wife Heidi at a Washington restaurant. There's a lot more on this, but he was a Democratic operative, and the Democrats knew him well. Isn't this interesting? Okay, that's enough for today. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.